welcome to Season 7, Episode 32 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we'll discuss the overwhelming reaction to Ubuntu 14.10, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, hello. You can send us messages using the chat doofa on the website and in the hash UUPCIRC channel. I'm Alan. Joining me this week are Tony.
Good evening.
Hello,
Tony. Hello.
He looked in the opposite direction.
I wasn't looking at him.
I love doing that.
Don't look at me.
Laura.
Hello.
And Mark.
Hello.
On the wheels of steel.
Yes, indeed.
Cool.
Where I was born to be.
It's all under control.
So, Tony, what have you been up to?
I went to SPAN conference yesterday.
What on earth is that?
It's a conference about scaling stuff.
It was a bit technical for Tony.
Yeah, yes. It's a conference about scaling software.
They didn't talk about gaming much then.
No, there was no gaming news. occasionally there were a few mentions, but it was about enterprise scaling software stuff. But I wasn't there to attend and learn, although I did get something from a couple of
talks. You were making the tea, were you?
I was photographing it.
Of course.
Was someone getting married there?
there were no marriages that I saw.
Were there Daleks? There have to be Daleks.
There were no Daleks. There were no marriages. Thanks to Matt Revell of former Lug Radio fame and former Canonical fame and
podcasting.
And generally he's been on this show a couple of times and things. Yes, he asked me to go along to photograph the conference. So I did that and it was good fun. Yeah. Awesome. Long day, but yeah, it was good.
Super. Cool. Mark, what have you been up to?
I have been recording some audio for the audio edition of Linux Voice.
Hello. What?
One of the things that Linux Voice said as part of their initial campaign was that after 9 months they were going to release their material as Creative Commons after 9 months. And as part of that, what they've said was it'd be really great if they can make it available like as accessibly as possible. So they want to create an audio version.
Interesting.
So what they've done is basically put all of the segment titles up in a blog post, which they think will work as audio recordings, and asked people who read the magazine to record a segment. So I did.
Right. Oh, so is this?
I did a couple.
This is like my mum sometimes does these sort of reading magazines or reading newspapers onto I think MP3s now.
Cassettes, for people who are
it was cassettes I think when she started out, yeah. But for people who are partially sighted or whatever
and want to listen in the car or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean anything.
Not
necessarily
okay.
People who can't read, but maybe people who'd prefer not to.
Oh yeah, interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Sounds ideal for me.
Yeah, as we've established the last two episodes.
Yes. And so all 9 of my Linux Voice episodes are still in their wrapper on the shelf.
The episodes in their wrapper.
Issues,
yes, are in their wrapper.
If you go to linuxvoice.com, I think they've not actually put the recordings up except for the ones that they did initially to kick it off, but I think they're still looking for a couple. So if somebody is listening and is interested in speaking, then...
Are there any requirements? Do you have to have a particularly good voice or something?
A microphone and be able to use Audacity. And if you don't have a copy of issue 1, you can email them and they'll send you a PDF.
Ah.
Nice.
Excellent. Yes. Good way to get a free magazine.
How about you, Laura? What have you been up to?
I've been using YNAB.
YNAB what?
It's You Need a Budget.
What?
It's not free software. However, it does run on Ubuntu. It used to run on Linux, apparently, better because it's an Adobe Air application. But it now installs on Wine.
What is it?
It's budget software, basically.
Well, like GNU Cash or
I don't know because I've never used any of those.
Right.
And I've tried to use spreadsheets and it doesn't work very well.
What made you choose YNAB?
Other than
the ridiculous name.
I know, it's a stupid name. Because a friend at work was using it, and there's an Android app or iPhone app for it as well. So the idea is that you set up your budget on the spreadsheet-style thing, and then when you buy something, you enter that in your phone, and that syncs back through Dropbox and things. It's pretty cool, and it works on my Ubuntu machine. The only slight thing that doesn't work is just one little dialogue doesn't appear when it's meant to, but it's not critical.
Interesting. I wonder if that's fixed with a later version of Wine. Could be a Wine thing.
It could be. It does sit there churning. I think there's just some leak or something somewhere.
There is a Wine PPA, I think, and it's maintained by the Wine people.
Might give that a go.
Might be worth a punt.
So it has a month-long full-featured demo.
Yes.
And then it's some money, presumably.
Well,
ironically,
well,
you have
well,
to set aside your budget for that.
Yes. No. Well, you.
It comes
I did
with
download,
it pre-allocated.
I did download the trial originally, and they have all this kind of stuff around it. So the idea is you could do it without buying the software at all if you wanted to. You can still use their educational stuff, and it's like there's these four rules, that, and it's a bit like Scientology in that respect. You sort of move up the. No, it's
wow.
Not. It's wow. Really not. The ultimate thing is the idea that you can live off last month's income, so you've always got an income in hand, right. And so they kind of build you up to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the point is that they do all these webinars. So I joined a webinar, and at the end of every webinar, they do a draw for a license, and I won the license.
Ah, cool!
So I got a free copy. So I was $40 up.
Joined a webinar, lost your freedom.
Yeah.
Well done.
Alan, what have you been doing, my friend?
I went to Washington, but we haven't got time to talk about that. So let's move on.
Did you blog about it?
I did.
Okay, read your blog, popey.com/blog.
So we were talking about the new release of Ubuntu.
There's been a new release of Ubuntu?
I know.
Wow.
So apparently it happened last Thursday.
Yes.
Didn't really notice, and this is the point.
Right.
Okay.
So our question is, should all software releases have a fanfare?
Good question. So I guess the reason why people didn't notice is because there wasn't a lot of PR around it, because there wasn't any like massively new features going into it. So it wasn't like, you know, a big deal about, you know, some, you know, new desktop, new icons, new theme or anything like that. It looks very similar to
So what has actually changed?
Well, there's loads of bug fixes and security updates, and all the applications are updated, you know, new LibreOffice, new kernel.
But this is the release after an LTS. Aren't you supposed to break things?
It's interesting. Lots of people say that. They kind of say, oh, well, you know, the one after an LTS is the...
Yeah, we want another nasty newt or whatever it was called.
I've heard it called a cowboy release.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look back... that's not always the case. If you look back at the LTS, the one after 10.04 and the one after 6.06.
They're usually better, actually, aren't they?
Even the one after 8.04.
No, I remember that one very well.
8.10.
I had to use OpenSUSE for 6 months.
Oh, bless. But some of them, you know, if you go back and have a look at the reviews, they are like, well, nothing new landed or nothing major landed. And often, well, part of that might be that the LTS was based on Debian testing, mm-hmm. and the one after the LTS is based on Debian Unstable, and so there's a load of stuff pulled in from Debian Unstable, and everyone's busy doing all that and pulling all the new stuff in, and there's not actually anything super new and interesting landing in that LTS.
I think it was the 10.04 one. I found that 10.10 sort of fixed everything that didn't work very well in 10.04.
Right.
And gave you the drivers that you actually wanted and things like that. I think it was the 10 release.
Right. So, I mean... this happens to have been a release that doesn't have a huge amount in it. Part of the reason for that is most of the company is working on the phone.
Right.
So, yeah, with everyone focused on making sure Unity 8 works well on the phone and all the apps work on the phone, there's fewer people working on the desktop. There's still a desktop team, and there's still people maintaining Unity 7 and so on, compiz and all of that. Yeah, malarkey and doing the ISO testing and stuff, but it's just not as many people focused on it. So there's fewer people creating new stuff for the desktop.
So in commercial software, yeah, software that you pay for to upgrade or you pay for each release or whatever, you generally have to have lots of new features in, otherwise people won't pay for it.
Or you have to put the features back in which you took out in the previous release.
As my friend Richard Stallman says... Wait. You said commercial software. Do you mean proprietary software?
Well, not necessarily.
Well, that's why I paused, but I mean, no, yeah. Where you have to pay for it.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's proprietary or not.
Okay.
It's where
you have to motivate people to part with some
cash.
Yeah,
is there a justification for spending money, or should they just stay on the release that they're already on? And if you don't put the shiny new things in that impress them, they're not going to upgrade.
It's the problem they had with Microsoft Office for years and years.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they put the ribbon in and everybody was like, oh.
Well, yeah, I guess. And the fact that, you know, our product is free makes it a hard sell, if you like. But the thing is, it's something you can upgrade to anyway. Whether you get it anyway.
Yeah.
Whether we make a big song and dance about it or not, if you're already on it, you'll get that upgrade. But for new people, yes.
Yeah.
It's not a great way for us to entice new people into the platform by saying, we've just put out a new release, there's nothing new in it.
But
go for it anyway.
But then if they're new people, they don't know what went in this release versus last release. So you just tell them what's in there.
Right, yeah. We could do a big blog post about this is the best release ever, it's faster, it uses less memory and all that kind of marketing stuff. But actually, if you ran 1404, you'd get pretty much the same experience.
And that's what you probably want new people on anyway.
Well, yeah, and I'm surprised. I keep seeing people talking about upgrading. Right, I'm going to upgrade 1410, and I think, why? Why are you doing that? But then that's what we've ingrained in people is that on release day people go nuts downloading. I'm downloading the new ISO, or I'm upgrading, and the archive's slow, and I can't upgrade, and it's taking ages, and all that kind of stuff. That people will wait 2 days because it takes too long to upgrade.
So. Well, it used to be that there were big chunks of improvement in each release.
Right.
And not only was...
Your mouse might start working.
Yeah.
Or not.
Or stop.
Stop working.
Not only was Ubuntu putting in more polish into the distribution, but the general sort of Linux ecosystem was still developing underneath it.
Mm.
So, you were having new drivers and things land, and my perception, maybe wrongly, but my perception is that the pace of evolution of the Linux desktop has slowed over the last couple of years. So there is no real compelling reason to upgrade.
Right. And, it's got to the point where more or less most of the time on a modern machine you bought in the last 5 years, your wireless will work. Any USB stick you plug in will work. A Bluetooth adapter will work.
Yeah.
Your mouse, keyboard, gaming controller will all work. The video driver will work. Yeah. There's fewer and fewer things that don't work that compel you to say, oh wow, that's fixed in Linux kernel 3.16 or something.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I can't remember. I think I heard someone make the comment on another podcast that really it's I don't really care about getting a new version of the operating system. I more care about getting new versions of the apps, because the operating system it works and then it gets out of my way. Which is what Ubuntu does, which is why I like it, then what I actually care about is, can I run the latest versions of the apps?
Right. And that is interesting in and of itself, because that's what we're moving to. With 1504, 1510, maybe 1604, that kind of timeline, it's going to be the case that you update your system, and then after that, you get app updates. So a new version of LibreOffice comes out, boom, you get it. And that could be a 4.0 to 5.0, not just a 4.1, 4.11 or something like that, a little incremental bug fix. You'd get brand new version of the app. And the same with your browser and whatever other applications you've got installed as well. That we're making that separation between the OS and the apps. So the OS is built using Debian packages in the same way as it is now, but the apps are delivered via Qlik packages from the Qlik store.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we're aiming to do, is make it so that users don't have to worry about OS updates. They just get their app updates as daily Qlik packages.
So what sorts of other examples of things that upgrade a lot?
I'm looking at my Android tablet and I can see I've got some software updates. And I almost never, I have it set to automatically update, right? And the same goes with, when I had an iPhone, that would automatically update. I never go and look and see what they are. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether I've just become lethargic about software updates, or I've been conditioned now that Firefox and...
It doesn't matter so much.
Yeah, well...
Well, but that's different, because it's exactly the same with the Ubuntu Update Manager. When that pops up, you don't say, oh, what are all the updates? But, if a new version of Android pops up and says, oh, there's a new version of Android to download, do you not then think, oh, I wonder what's new?
It's a major release.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it was 4 to 5, then I might.
And they do
be
tend to make a fanfare about that Android.
Because they make a lot of changes.
Mm.
But for a minor release, you might think an LTS to a non-LTS release for Android, from a 4.4 to a 4.5 or something like that, I probably wouldn't even look. I'd just go, yeah, all right, whatever,
right.
And press the update button.
Ooh. Yeah.
Would you not?
You're like, no, I always wait for somebody at work to do it first. And then ask them how it's gone. Unfortunately, there's about three or four of us on the corridor with the same phone.
what are you expecting to happen if they update? Are you expecting the whole UI to change and you don't like it, so you won't update to it? Or are you expecting some critical app that they use that you also use, it breaks, and that's annoying?
Yeah, any of those things.
Just bad stuff happens.
Yeah,
I find that surprising that you have an expectation that stuff will break from, you know, Android, which has millions and millions of users around the world.
He's got experience of years of Linux.
Yeah.
True that.
Yeah, I used to run, you know, Debian Unstable on boxes in work.
Days when he was technical.
Yeah, when I was able to capable of doing such things.
As I understand it, the way Android delivers updates is they do canary, like they do builds to a small set of people, and based on the number of error reports they get back from that small set of people, they widen the pool to more people and more people and more people, which is why you don't have everyone getting the update at the same time. That's why you get the update later than someone else. And even if you're sat there refreshing and clearing cache and doing whatever you can to try and force the thing, sometimes it won't come to you because it's been canaried out to a bunch of other people first.
What if you're the canary?
Well, yes.
Nature's canary.
So what about Mac OS X? Because that's one where you do need to get people to pay for it generally, don't you?
For the OS? Are we talking OS or apps?
OS on the desktop.
For major releases, the most recent one was Snow free, Leopard, I think. Or whatever.
Yeah, I thought they'd move to it being free.
Yeah, the last two, Maverick and Yosemite, were both free.
Okay. Worst name ever.
What? Yosemite?
Maverick.
Yosemite.
Yosemite. Okay, Maverick. Yosemite. those are now free. I mean, it's quite a major operation to upgrade a system, like whether it's Linux or OS X or Windows. They're pretty major, and the same with mobile devices as well. Mm. You see quite significant change, but they're also trying to entice developers as well to move because they have new APIs. Not just you as a user should upgrade because this new thing has Shiny that you will like. It's more aimed at you developers should target this new version because there's a new Shiny you can deliver to your users who are customers who will pay you for that stuff.
Of course, yeah.
So it's more aimed at them than end users.
So do you think it's fair to say now that it's kind of people only really notice new features if they're either really good or really annoying?
Really significant or really broken.
Yeah. So, like, all these people upgrading their iPhones and then complaining about, is it iOS
8?
That one. And they're all complaining about that. But if it had just gone smoothly and been boring, they'd probably just gone, whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have an iPhone sat on my desk that I don't use anymore, and I updated it to iOS 8 and didn't really notice any difference.
Okay.
Mm. It's probably because I've got an older phone. If I had a brand new one, I probably might notice some of the new Shiny. But yeah, I don't think it's just us. I don't think it's just us that have this apathy around new software updates. I think this is a general trend because there are automatic updates in iOS and Android and automatic browser updates, and a browser is like the biggest thing everybody uses all day every day.
Yeah,
you know, these app updates, it's going to get to the point where the desktop OS is going to do these incremental changes and you won't notice
it, which is what Ubuntu's always done.
Incremental bug fixes, yeah, but I'm talking about major point releases, so from 14.04 to 14.6. So yeah, I reckon in 3 years' time, maybe less, you'll be updating your Ubuntu machine and the OS underneath will change and the kernel will change and all the other bits and pieces, all the libraries underneath will change, and you just won't notice. It'll just be I'll take that update.
Yeah.
Will we still get to have nicknames for releases?
Yeah, we might burn through them pretty quickly if we
the rolling roadhog.
No, but yeah, it'll be like, no, what was it? Grumpy Groundhog was the idea to have a rolling release. Grumpy Groundhog. I think it makes sense given that everything else is moving in that direction. It makes no sense for us to stop the train every 6 months, everybody get off and ship it and polish it and then push it out the door and then start again.
There's always someone who's in the loop.
Every 6 months. Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? Do you know what? We actually had the release last week while we were in Washington, and that's unusual. We don't usually have half the company in the same place when the release is happening.
So if a bomb had gone off in Washington.
Well, indeed. So
that would have been the biggest story. Half of Canonical wiped out.
It's hard because the release is always on a Thursday, and the release team are really hard at work getting that release out the door and making sure all the right buttons are pressed to make sure the release goes out on time and the mirrors are up to date and you know all the web pages are all up to date and everything. And everyone else around them who's kind of finished what they're doing because everything's frozen now because of the release, they're all standing around waiting to drink beer. And so they had a party and they deferred the party till the Friday because it's a little bit difficult. If you're all standing around waiting to have a beer and the release team are still sat there, you know, doing their work, it's not very comfortable for them if everyone's around them going, yay, 1410's out, let's have a beer. So they deferred that until the Friday. So we have parties on Friday now. Which is the most important part of the release. Maybe we'll have fewer parties.
I was going to say, maybe the biggest thing about the release is the developers wanting to have a party. And actually, the customers, users, don't care.
Well, now that as soon as 1410 went out, the archive for Vivid Vervet, which will be 1504.
Granville.
Vivid Vervet will be 1504. That archive's open, and they've started work on that already. So it doesn't really stop for very long. It freezes for a while before the release, and then it's... full steam ahead.
All aboard. There
with
we go.
Your hangovers.
If you've got any thoughts about whether software should be fanfared or just slip quietly out into the ether, send us an email, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. It's time for another command line love, and this one has been sent in by a chap called Popey.
Hello!
Oh dear, it's him.
Alan's here.
This one is called Fish, and I presume it's something to do with fishing.
No.
Or labels on backs of cars?
What? Ooh. Oh, no. No, that's a game we play.
That's a game you play.
Yeah, it is.
What's Fish about, then?
Fish. So I discovered Fish by watching someone else use it. So I didn't really discover it. I just saw someone use it. I thought, that looks interesting. What is it?
Let's claim it for myself.
Exactly. It's a shell like Bash or ZSH.
Right.
The friendly interactive shell, I believe.
Exactly. Friendly interactive shell. And I've set Fish to be my shell now instead of Bash.
Oh. Cool.
And it's really nice because it's got tab completion. And you might think, well, I already have tab completion. But this is quite cool because it kind of guesses the commands that you're going to type. So
can you just sit and let it go?
Not
just keep
quite.
It in tab.
Yeah, just keep it in tab. Eventually, rm minus r. So for example, I often like scp files to another place, or I run certain commands with certain parameters.
Right.
And I just start typing the first couple, and it fills in or it guesses. Not only the command that I'm typing, but also the parameters that I'm likely to put after
that's
it.
Nice.
And all you do is just press the right-hand arrow key and it goes boop and fills the whole thing in. You just press enter. Done.
And if you do a series of things like you change to a certain directory, you start cartwheel, those sorts of things, does it remember that if you do one command, hypothetically, you're likely to follow the next one?
I don't know. I don't know what the logic, the heuristics of how it figures out what you do, or whether it just thinks, well, this command starts with a C and you usually type that. So yeah, let's go. But I found it really speeds me up. Because I can just, like, I was, a few days ago, I SCP'd some files up to a server somewhere, and I couldn't remember the directory that I put them in, and I just typed SC, and it went, and filled in the whole line with the directory of everything, and I was like, oh, yes, that's perfect. That's...
One thing I quite like about Fish is the top of the website says, finally, a command line shell for the 90s.
Brilliant.
If you combine it with that terminal emulator app that looks like an old green
cool
screen.
Retro term, yes.
What was that called? Is that what it's called?
Cool retro term, yeah.
And that's
it used
what
to be
it
called
is.
Cold, o- cool old term, but old is old, and now retro is the new old. So,
is it? I thought that was quite old now.
It's cool retro term.
It's not vintage these days.
Maybe it'll be called cool nouveau term or something at some point. Nouveau retro.
Well, Super Engineer is listening live and suggests that, Alan, you've just said the phrase, I've set Fish to be my shell, on the record, and there are men in white coats coming for you.
Well, you know, it's quite nice. Once I configured it, I've not looked back yet.
Cool.
Excellent. And that's all the command line love this week.
Thank you.
now it's time for some feedback. After last time's discussion about diversity in our camp, we got a bit of feedback. And the first one up is from Brian Walton, who emailed us to say, I've just paused episode 30 during your discussion on diversity at Og Camp. I'm not sure I agree with the idea of implementing quotas on each type of person you'd like to see attend. You're right to encourage more inclusive behaviour if you can identify areas lacking in this. He said, I've not attended any community event despite wanting to. It's not because of the colour of my skin or my gender or where I was born. I feel nervous about attending for other reasons. You could survey why people do and don't attend. In this way, you might find out how to be more inclusive across the board. You may discover whether people of a minority sector feel excluded, and if so, why. I appreciate that ingrained behaviour influences those around us, and we're often unaware of it, and that changing such behaviour can have positive effects. This may be more important than simple quotas. Right, back to the podcast. Maybe you go on to say these things and I've wasted my time writing this, but you do keep telling us to get in touch in a slightly colonial manner.
Blame Tony.
Yes.
It's tricky doing a survey of people who didn't attend.
Because yes. How would you know that they hadn't attended?
Who would you target that? How would you target that? You know, that's tricky.
Yes. It's very easy to target people who did attend.
We know the known knowns, but people who didn't turn up, you know, but we don't know the unknown unknowns.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you didn't come to Og Camp for a reason and you're listening to this, tell
and
us
there are
why.
A lot of people. Probably.
Yeah, but the Venn diagram is pretty small that you're looking at there. You want all the people who heard about it, who don't listen to this and didn't come.
Ah, but a lot of people who listen to the podcast don't come to Og Camp.
True.
So that's a good start.
Yeah.
Because we do ram it down the throats. So.
We do.
You know, and there'll be a lot of people who, you know, perhaps listen around the world and simply just can't get to the UK to go to Og Camp.
Yeah. It would be nice to have just like a simple 2-question survey that is just like one tick box, did you go to Og Camp, yes or no, and another one that says, if not, why not, and just a free text field and people could just put whatever they like in there.
Yeah, then do some sort of analysis of it.
Imagine we've sent you that form. Could you send us an email with those answers in?
Or we could just do that. That would, Google.
Stick
Google
it on the website.
Survey, survey thing and put it in the show notes or something. That might be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? Give that a go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Make that so.
And then Brian36 left a comment on the website saying,
thanks for the podcast. Very thought-provoking, especially with regard to colour and gender at public meetings. I belong to art and language groups, and most members are female. Maybe that's because we're retired and most men stay at home to watch the footy. I'm also a radio ham, and as this is worldwide, colour and ethnicity doesn't come into it, but you do have to pass an exam. Most radio hams are male, so what's the problem? Each social group comes loaded with stuff like geekery and prejudices. It's right to take a good look hard at ourselves and try to take away the barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. As you say, something like radio ham, which is essentially open to everyone, a bit like open sources, yet there may still be factors that prevent some groups of people feeling that they can engage with it. Even though open source has the anonymity, if you like, or of being behind usernames and things which don't have to reveal anything specific about you, radio ham stuff, I believe they use voices still.
Yes.
It's speech rather than Morse or anything like that.
Although you could put your voice through some sort of voice disguise.
Yeah, there's a whole debate about whether people should have to pretend to be themselves or somebody else online anyway, but without getting into that, are there reasons that people don't feel they can engage? And just sort of talking about these things, as Brian says, I think is important just to think about them, really, mull them around.
I did read something the other day that said that although where you... in open source, everybody's like, oh well, you know, you don't have to reveal your gender or your color or whatever, and actually what happens is everyone assumes you're white and male.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and there is a big movement for people to be themselves, you know, and whatever gender, whatever ethnicity, whatever anything else they decide that they are, you know, be that online, and you know, don't try and hide it. Cool.
And next, Phelan Whiteley emailed to say,
as per your pottering news last week...
Were you trying to do his accent?
No? I wasn't.
Sorry, you started very, very slowly.
As per your pottering news last week, Here's a link to an LWM piece that's a very balanced point that the kernel mailing list really isn't the hive of scum and villainy it's hyped to be, except on the very odd occasion. Gives a great example of how they help someone who's repeatedly ignored them. I'm not saying there isn't some issue there, but Herr Pottering and his compatriots seem to be partaking in some serious pot kettle light absorption competition. I see what you're saying there, Phelan. Anyway, I hope they screened Tony. I know Africa is a very big country, but no... He put country.
Yeah, he does underline that. I think it's meant to be a joke.
Yes, but you can't be too careful.
Yeah,
yes.
I think it's a 21-day incubation period for Ebola.
No snogs for Tony.
I'm well past that.
And that's the end of your feedback.
Oh, is it? Is it really? Are you sure there's not another one there?
Because Alan points at the clock.
Alan points at the clock.
Excellent.
Seamless.
I think we should just do that last one about Ogcamp.
For God's sake. I would like to thank Mark in particular for all his effort putting in organising Ogcamp 14. This is my first Ogcamp, and I hope it will be the first of many. I really appreciate the effort put in by Mark and all the organisers and every member of the crew who selflessly contribute to such a wonderful event. I enjoyed Popey's talk on the Ubuntu phone and look forward to its release from Max Dokes. Probably not typed in that tone of voice.
No, it was a very, very nice email that you've just ruined.
It's a nice email for you and Mark.
And you ruin it for yourself.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks very much for that.
Thanks for listening. Our next show will be on Wednesday, the 12th of October.
November.
Wednesday, the 12th of November at 8:30.
In the evening.
Yes.
UTC.
Yes,
I hope everybody.
GMT.
GMT.
I hope everybody managed to cope with the time change properly.
No, I had one meeting today where it arrived an hour earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the other person insisted, "No, it's in the calendar in UTC." I was like, "May well be, but it's moved."
With ours, it depends who sets it up as to which time zone it takes.
Exactly. Well, he said at UTC. Apparently, what you should do is set all your meetings to be either in Iceland or Argentina.
Great,
and then they won't
move.
Yes.
Excellent.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.